Chapter 27. Seeds for the World. Red evening painted the undulating sands of Tamari's dunes. This land was so large that one could not have managed to get from one end to the other in a whole lifetime, Chenra thought. Since it was clear to him that the old Anthro gods were the key to changing the future, and even though he now no longer had Senyu, he did not want to be stopped. He still had only one goal, the Great Pyramid of Giza, the Tomb of Khufu. There they would meet. Since he still could not recognize this monument on the horizon, it still had to be a long way there. Every step his paws took was made more difficult by their sinking into the yellow grains. Like weights, the finely ground rock pulled on his limbs, and only with difficulty could he take one step after the other. A light wind blew and made the ends of his soiled headscarf dance gently. He panted softly and clenched his jaw strained. When would these exertions end? Would he be too late, and when would in time actually be? Oh, this barren land. What have I gotten myself into? Couldn't I have just stayed at home? What a desolate patch of earth, he spoke softly, dropping to his knees to pause, which had begun to ache from all the walking. The dog pulled out his drinking tube and took a big gulp from it, after which he sighed and looked up at the sky. Senyu had brought him far, but it was not enough. Moreover, he had not been able to keep his promise to send the animal home healthy. Once again, man had revealed his nature to him. Always he wanted to have everything, greedy for more and more. He did not even stop at innocent people, he had the feeling that they were in his way. But it was his kind that stood in the way of the innocent. The Gajan took it upon himself to distort the facts and justify his actions. The Alsatian remembered his homeland. There it was civilized and not everyone tried to rob and kill you. On Alpha Vol, he knew, the peoples were much more modern, more liberal. However, he also had to admit that this country was 2,000 years in the past and probably still had to mature. Gods! Please help me find this polished pile of stones. He pleaded aloud and closed his eyes, breathing exhaustedly. Why don't I see these landmarks yet? How much further is it? Then suddenly the wind stopped blowing and the Kisar's mind sorted itself out. He saw in his mind's eye images of Farhad and himself sitting in the human's tent, only to watch water evaporate in a chalice. As then, everything now became still and deep peace set in. As a meditative state began inside the Alsatian, his breathing became shallow and even, time seemed to stand still. There was enough of it now so that images and insights could continue to assemble in his mind to solve the puzzle of his story. The War of Nations on Alpha Vol was based on religious lies. For all the dog now knew, the first seven gods could not have been humans who created all life on the uninhabited planet. They were the ancient Egyptian gods of Gaja, who would soon try again to save their species to this other world. However, among the creatures sent to Alpha Vol there could not be foxes, wolves, dogs and horses. There were no such species among the ancient gods. How could they also have come from Egypt? Were they also Anthros who had previously lived elsewhere on Gaja? If not, who were their parents, or, how exactly did they come to Alpha Vol? Here there was a gap in the Kisar's understanding, which he could not fill. What he still knew was, Aram's female was killed by an Urser, a member of the Bear people, as one of them later also killed the man-god Ephraim, according to the stories. Being alone, Aram had to look for another female in Met area. She, too, already had another male at her side, a wolf. When Arya betrayed him with Aram, he turned away, founded Samojija and became its first wolf king. He looked for a new female and from his bloodline came the present regent Serena. Years later, Aramarans, the children of Arya and Banado, who had raped her, built the largest of all towers in their capital Bolmer. In the cave vault of the home of the fox and the she-wolf of old, the fox leader Cardoran built an underground laboratory and conducted experiments with kidnapped Samoydans to gradually genetically modify his race. In this laboratory there were all kinds of records about the gene experiments on wolves and also much about Gaja and the people from the time around the beginning of their calendar. This is almost congruent with the one on Alpha Vol, because here the calendar began when the connection between Alpha Vol and the pyramids of Giza broke. The belief in Aram and Arya as primordial beings was ingrained in the minds of the Aramarans, Samoydans, and Alsatians, since even the first Anthros could not have known that, in fact, the ancient Egyptian creators were their forefathers. Very much, what was religious, was a lie, invented and was supposed to make the peoples believe that there existed an order with which everyone could be satisfied. However, this was not so, because after all one projected only an image into the heads, which should hide complicated and difficult to understand things. It has always been like that here, and also on Gaja. I understood, if there were things that one could not explain to oneself, one looked for the simplest or most probable of all interpretations of meaning, in order to spare oneself complications in life. If one did not find anything suitable, there was always someone, a teacher, theologian, scientist, who pretended to be able to explain the sense of being to one. One could easily follow, surrender or submit to such a person and at the same time completely avoid the complex questioning of one's own developed philosophy of life. Since people in my time, a time of performance and efficiency-oriented society, feared for their security and their right to freedom, they very often avoided deviating from the straight, simple, predefined path. However, I was never such a person and for exactly this reason Chenra Gejaz was not either. That's exactly why he was the way he was, and that's the only reason he was here. He was not supposed to follow the path that I laid out for him in the form of my book, but to choose his own. Chenra quickly opened his eyes again. It was now almost all clear to him, the puzzle almost complete, except for one piece. It was still called, how? The male was content with the thought that all canids were descendants of Yanapu and were created over time from crosses of different species. But what did the god beings do to let the first Anthros reach Alpha Vol? The pyramids were the antennas, yes, but for what? And how was it triggered? While the dog now felt invigorated after this meditative pause, he still did not have much hope of reaching the burial site in time, if ever. When he looked around, he noticed that not far from him stood a rock that had the shape of a snake. He could have sworn that this had not been standing there when he closed his eyes. How am I? He asked himself. Promptly the dog remembered one of Handotep's sayings, you come to a large rock shaped like a snake. Go within yourself here and let the gods guide you. He had asked for the help of the gods and they had apparently heard him. But what should he do now? The Gajin told him to go into himself and then let the gods guide him after he reached the rock. So he wanted to follow the instruction, to go into himself, although he had just done so. Again, his canine eyes narrowed as he heard the other Tamrian's voice, true greatness is not in acting on the principles of others, but in designing some of your own. Again he opened his eyes and said to himself, no, that's not right, just going into the light. I will turn my back to the sun now that the earth has turned further. Where there is light, there must also be an opposite side that reveals another path. Without knowing it, he made the right decision to do something he had not been told to do. So it wasn't long before his path ended abruptly and he stood on the edge of a rocky precipice. Startled, he looked down into a valley and could see the cluster of ancient pyramids and the Sphinx some distance away. It can't be. He spoke aloud in amazement. I almost ran past that huge pile of rocks. Gods. However it was possible, the Kisar had found the Pyramid of Khufu, the largest of all, and knew that this was where the ceremony would take place. He realized that the eclipse would soon occur as he slowly descended a slope and could see several groups of Tamrians moving large wooden chests, statues, and other objects toward the pyramid. The Kisar hid behind bushes and crouched down when he was almost at the bottom of the slope. The way to the pyramid was not far now, but under no circumstances should he be discovered. The goal of his journey was near. He could not believe his eyes when, for the first time since arriving in Tamari, he spotted more Anthros that were not canine. A bird-like and a feline were walking toward the pyramid. They were clad in magnificent, opulent robes, carrying golden regalia and staffs that glittered in the sun. More anthropomorphic beings, whose species were all different, followed at some distance, and so it became clear to the Alsatian that the undertaking was imminent. He would have to wait, until he would have gained the impression that everyone was in this structure. He would exercise patience and keep a low profile. If anyone realized his intentions, he might be in trouble. If he had been caught, there was a possibility that this would be enough to cause the ceremony to fall through, but it was possible that he would merely have been detained and it would still have been performed. It would also have been possible that a big bang would have been needed. It was necessary to delay the ceremony until the solar eclipse necessary for this would have passed. The dog had to decide on a course of action, cause confusion without a fight or stir up the people. I'd better wait until I know exactly what's going to happen. The opportunity will present itself, he thought to himself and waited patiently. After a while, no one approached the imposing structure, which the shepherd dog then slowly approached closer and closer, creeping from bush to bush. A few meters from the entrance to the site, the dog crouched behind a large rock and watched the guards who were outside. They had gone into position and seemed very attentive. It could not take long now, so Chenro was already thinking about which guard he could take out, as silently as possible. Just as he was about to get up and sprint off, the plan was abruptly interrupted when he heard Arabic comments and shouts. He turned his head to their source and recognized in the distance a troop of Roman soldiers carrying a gleaming gold palanquin. Since it was decorated with curtains, the sovereign could not make out who they were carrying, but he intuitively knew that the traveler must be the Pharaoh Cleopatra. Since she was the rightful queen, she was to preside over the upcoming undertaking as high priestess. Further waiting ensued until the soldiers with the queen were stopped at the entrance to the Khufu pyramid. At this, the dog's suspicions were confirmed when one of the Romans exclaimed, "Grant admittance to the god queen. Pharaoh of Tamari, the united land of Kemet and Tedesheret, Cleopatra Netjeret Meredites." He spoke Egyptian, which translated meant the title of the mistress, the divine, loving the father. As I read about it, I suddenly choked on my cup of tea and needed a moment to regain my composure. I spoke to myself of the parallel I had just become aware of through my reading, Tamari, Aramaria. You've got to be kidding. Kemet, the Black Land, was the name given to the northern part of Egypt, the upper area of the flag of the Aramaean Empire. Tedesheret, the Red Land, was the name of the south, the lower part of the flag. I could not believe it, because it seemed surreal. The rectangle in the lower right corner of the national flag of Aramaria, black and white, a division, united by a frame. What were these coincidences? It could not be that many years ago I designed Aramaria and its inhabitants without suspecting that there had been something in human history that had already existed in a very similar form. This sameness frightened me and made me curious at the same time. So was this the key? Had Chenra gone to Egypt at a time when it was called the beloved land, Tamari, the red and black parts united? I sighed, phew, okay. Let's see which one of you mummies fits this time. Again I took a few books from the hospital library, browsed through a long list of pharaohs and noble families. After quite a while, my eyes stopped wide open. Cleopatra VII ruled from 51 to 30 BC. Her epithet was the divine, loving the father. Not only did the number 7 fit perfectly with everything I had thought up for my protagonist's origin story, 7 gods who created the world, 7 jagranates of the realm of Aramaria, but also this woman's epithet made me feel certainty, Shani Arazivo Gajazi, Chenra Gejaz, he who honors the mother and is of the earth, is in Tamari with the divine who loves the father. This could not be a coincidence. Now I knew not only where this dog was, but also exactly when. My heart was racing, now I knew everything. I had found it, knew the exact time, I included the solar eclipse. So now I could steer Chenra again. Since it was not clear to me how exactly the transfer of the Anthros to Alpha Vol should take place, I also had to wait, just like my protagonist, until a favorable opportunity for an intervention would arise. Inwardly, I had a restless, tense feeling because of this, Chenra and I, both of us sitting in the starting blocks at the same moment, with over 2,000 years difference, ready to strike. He in battle, armed with a sacred dagger, me armed with a pen to rewrite his history. The wait, I thought, would certainly be worth it. Which person could claim to have this knowledge about the pyramids and their meaning, which would be offered to me in a few moments? One of us, I knew, would be the first to seize the opportunity whenever it presented itself. The decisive factor would be the right moment. Who would be faster, act more cleverly? Another scrutinizing glance towards the sun and the shepherd realized that it was time to finally enter the structure. When no one else entered the tomb, his legs kicked into gear and in a crouched position he crept up to one of the pyramid sides. Slowly he walked along it, then upright pressed his armored back against the smoothly polished, mirrored stone slabs and peered around the corner, noticing that only 2 Romans remained at the entrance to the monument. Since gods were present here, they apparently feared no outside interference. Nor was Ptolemy interested in what his sister was up to. After all, Chenra already knew, even he was forbidden to enter the structure. Fascinated, the Alsatian looked up at the pyramid and gently stroked the cool stone in the shadow of the sun with his soft paw. Impressed, he compared the image of the perfect, smoothly polished surface with what he knew from photos from the present time of Gaja. The monument shone bright white and bore a gilded spire, visible in the desert from almost any distance, reflecting the sun's rays. Wherever the bright clay must have remained for 2,000 years, the pyramid would look different later. A feeling of awe filled him. These sights, he knew, would be able to stand the test of time, probably as the only thing man had ever been able to create. Nothing could compare to it, nothing more imposing or impressive. As the only one of the seven wonders of the world, the tombs would defy everything, sand, wind, man. In the books available to me, I'd seen pictures of the tombs depicting what they must have looked like. I envied the shepherd that he could see these monuments in all their splendor, but I had never managed to admire them even in their present, neglected and plundered state. I briefly looked at one of the pictures, sighed, and put the book about ancient Egypt aside. No, I wanted to imagine the environment of my protagonist without using prefabricated images. That was one of the reasons why there should be no pictures in Vulpes Lupus Canis, at least, if it had been up to me. Man, I thought, had been given the ability to create his own worlds, and he should use this gift, which was called imagination. Chenra picked up a small stone and threw it in the direction of the guards. Although he did not hit any of them, he could now be sure of the attention he wanted to attract with this action. "Qui est illa?" shouted one of the men, holding his spear intently. "Reprehendo," he then said, instructing his comrade to look. The latter walked quickly along the wall, his staff weapon also drawn, and shouted "Qui est illa?" which meant "Who is there?" Breathing deeply, the male waited behind the corner for the arrival of the guard and, the very next moment after he emerged from behind the corner, twisted its neck. The neck snapped, which, however, was too quiet for the other Roman in the distance to notice. Chenra was also so fast that the defeated man was not able to send a call for help either. Now we had to wait again, because the comrade of the fallen man would go to look for him if he did not come back for a while. "Justinus, quae oce tecum?" This Roman also needed a moment for the stretch, in which the male looked again to the sky. The moon was visible, but still had some distance to the sun. There was still time, but he did not know what to expect in the pyramid, how many people and gods would be there and, much more important, what he was supposed to do there once he put a paw in the structure. Since the dog soldier had never seen the inside of a pyramid, he could not prepare himself for what the next moments would be like. Would he encounter narrow corridors, a labyrinth, a great hall? Was there enough light? The dog was startled when the Gajan suddenly stood in front of him with his eyes wide open and had already pulled a warning horn from his belt. "Oh no! You will not!" The sovereign spoke grimly, taking the guard's head in his hands and slamming it down on his bent knee so that a very short bit of a choppy scream escaped the man before he fell unconscious to the sand. Gajes didn't waste any time, immediately took one of the boulders lying around and hit the human skull with it. A first time and a soft sigh of the man sounded. A second for a laceration to the head. A third, with more force, breaking the skull. A fourth, after which a short fountain of blood escaped. Death now made the silence. Panting with exertion, the Alsatian again ventured a furtive glance past the corner towards the entrance of the tomb, no more guards to be seen. "Well then," he spoke to himself, looking around, "it's now or never, I guess." So, again in a bent posture and with his sword drawn, he ran off to the only entrance of the structure. Meanwhile, I sighed as I read and coughed abruptly, after which my stomach ached and I took a pill from my nightstand with trembling hands and washed it down with a big gulp of water. "Well done, Chenra," I praised, "now why don't you show me how they did it?" Finally, I cleared my throat and already had the pen in my hand, ready to change the story should my protagonist be ready, so that I would write a single and all-important line. The shepherd was now standing in front of the dark entrance of the pyramid, from which a cold breeze was flowing. He sighed softly, "This is dark as hell." Although he felt no fear when he entered the room, he was, after all, the Kesar, always brave and fearless, his heart nevertheless beat up to his neck, so that he could feel his own pulse. It almost sounded to him as if the cold, rocky walls reflected his heartbeat and made it all the more audible to him. Otherwise, it was dead quiet here. A good environment for a pharaoh for whom the world would have been too noisy for the afterlife. Upon entering, it seemed as if the Alsatian was walking into an endless hole that swallowed him. A black wall of nothingness. How could those who were already here have found their way? Chenra had not seen torches with them when the pharaoh and the Romans passed through the entrance. How could his eyes get used to it as quickly as possible? He felt dizzy as his vision became clearer and he could suddenly see very well in the dark. He had regained another ability that had disappeared in the course of evolution, and now, like an earthen dog, he could orient himself perfectly well in the dark. At first, the male was puzzled by this, but also understood this change as something that came back to him when he meditated with Farhad. Now he could make out a narrow passage, the path of which must have been taken by the others present. Quietly he crept through the corridor and heard, beside his heartbeat, croaking whispering voices speaking in old Egyptian, "Go home, for you are not welcome. Run no further, for you have no business here, estranged God. Get out of here." Chenra spied hieroglyphs on the walls, moving slowly, seeming to interact with each other, blinking and moving their lips. They were all watching him, scrutinizing his appearance. Some raised their spears carved in stone, threatened, and continued to whisper. Their faces contorted into grimaces, meant to frighten the onlooker and keep him from moving forward. The Kisar gulped, but showed no fear as he said, "Leave me alone. I'll go wherever it suits me. I am, after all, a descendant of the gods. You are not one of them, not a god. Go back to your time, dog creature, for you have no business here," the voices spoke. They were right, Chenra was not a god, even if some Tamrians believed so. He came from the future, was an evolved being, not a primordial one. The timeline was the wrong one, which apparently displeased the spirits that grace the walls here. Their small spears and swords protruded a little from the walls, but could not be dangerous to the dog. "You have no business here," it continued. The sovereign was not deterred by this and continued his slow, deliberate stride until he came to an open entrance to another room in which light flickered. Stealthily, he glanced around the corner, keeping his head down, and realized that the anthros and humans who had gone into the pyramid earlier were gathering here. It was a large room with a stone slab in the center. What it showed Chenra could not tell, but it was the center of the circle in which those present had gathered. When the shepherd dog looked up at the ceiling, he realized that the room had to be exactly in the middle of the structure, under its top. Whatever was planned here, the shape of the pyramid and the central location of the stone slab had significance for this. When some torches on the walls were lit by Roman soldiers, Cleopatra got out of her palanquin and knelt with her head raised before the stone tablet around which the god beings had placed themselves. "Gods," she began in a bright, piercing voice. "Now it is time to make another attempt after all the orbits around the sun. Once again Apep and Reef face each other, we'll soon unite. The path to the other world will open again and this time we will succeed in giving you access. It is an honor to serve you and lead this ceremony. May the other departed gods support us again today, may fate be kind to us." Wordlessly, the anthros of various species, lion, crocodile, bird and more, let the pharaoh's voice fade away, not moving but standing there like rocks. "What on earth are you up to?" the Alsatian wondered as the monarch stood up and placed a clay pot in front of her bare feet. The dog had to admit that Cleopatra was a very beautiful, well-proportioned woman, for a Gajan woman, anyway. She had black hair braided into Rasta braids and a slender figure. Her movements were graceful, studied and deliberate. Surely she must have practiced what was to be done here. Her clothes were worthy of a queen and were made of fine fabrics. Lots of gold jewelry flattered her neck. She also had black eyeliner painted around her eyes, befitting her social standing, since Chenra also wore this ornament around his eyes, but it had not been painted on him, but had grown naturally into his fur, he again noticed the preordained connection between himself and the Egyptians. The woman exclaimed, "Receive from us, the goddess of men, ruler of all life in this world, the blood of the subjects as a proof of our homage." No sooner had she uttered this sentence than two Roman soldiers knelt at her feet and looked at her with their heads held high. A third stepped to the pharaoh's side and handed her a dagger that reflected the light of the flames. Without further words, she slit the throats of the two. The injured also said nothing, did not scream, which caused astonishment in Chenra. He watched in silence as the god queen caught the blood of the warriors, who still did not lower their heads, did not fall down at first and seemed to be in a trance, with the vessel. A few seconds later, the men fell lifelessly to the side and were dragged by their feet by two more across the room to a corner and deposited. "Quite barbaric," mused the Kisar, watching as Cleopatra again threw herself on her knees and held out the filled bowl to the gods with her outstretched arms. "As a token of our worship, we offer the blood of the retinue to you gods. In memory of all yours who went before and were cruelly judged by men. Again, we open the way for you to escape their cruelty and ignorance for the truth. Yanapo stood in front of the human woman, took the vessel and placed it on the center of the stone tablet. He then rejoined the circle, with Chenra wondering when and how best to intervene. The ceremony had now begun, which the dog watched curiously. He noticed that the jackal was carrying Amarok's sword, which he had taken from the dog when he negotiated the architect's survival. Peraspera ad astra, of course. The dog thought to himself, understanding that the sword bore its characters for a reason. The jackal demanded it back from him then, and now my protagonist knew why. One after another, the god figures spoke short verses, each in a different language that the sheepdog had never heard before. They all closed their eyes and folded their hands in prayer. A moment later, the creatures purred to themselves, lowered their heads, and held hands as they spoke the verses. Cleopatra now completed the circle, took two animal figures by the hands and intoned in ancient Egyptian, "Wise ancestors, great warriors, help us and give way. Great Re, let your disc shine brightly. Great Apep, embrace the god of light and destiny." Gejaz was unsure, when would be the right time for his mission? Would it be enough to disrupt the process until the upcoming solar eclipse was over? The time for his necessary decision had now almost come. Okay, four Romans, one woman, and six gods holding hands. That should be possible somehow, he mused. In the history of the Aramaeans, Samoyedans and Alsatians it was written unanimously that seven gods had created the world. But why did he see only six of them here? He wondered if he could assign the correct name to each of them: Yanapu, the jackal he knew personally, Sobek, Bast, Thoth, Sekhmet, and Horus. Who was the seventh god? Was Cleopatra the seventh meant by this? After all, in this country she was considered a goddess in human form. Thus, the observer believed that the Gajan must have had a part in the origin of life on Alpha Vol. So that was what it was all about. A ceremony was repeated that had not worked before. But it was clear that it should have an effect this time, because this fitted with the current time on Chenra's home planet. It was necessary to make sure that it would not work this time either. Thus, life would not even arise in his world, wars between nations would not be fought, and Joliad and Amarok would not have to die. But then followed in the dog's mind the fear of the certainty he had been trying to suppress all along. Time always found its way back to the intended point of its fulfillment, no matter what one did. He was far too far back in time. Where he was now, he could only change one key event. There seemed to be no middle ground. Either everyone would live, everything would occur as he knew, or no one would exist. Chenra considered stopping his action, but then looked again at what had happened. His friends would not live, but then they would not have to suffer either. The story of Vulpes Lupus Canis would no longer take place. Love, he said to himself sadly, always meant renunciation. And he was now ready for this. The male had no idea how, but took it upon himself to disturb those involved and make them miss the conjunction of the sun and moon. He just had to distract them for a short while, then the current attempt would fail. At the exact moment he was about to start walking, the participants released their hands from each other again, adjusted their incantations, and opened their eyes as the stone slab began to glow with a shallow blue light. The male shepherd's eyes widened as the gods did strange things. They removed their clothing from their lower bodies and exposed their genitals. "You don't really want to," he spoke quietly to himself, anticipating what was about to take place. As if on cue, the gods, male and female, began masturbating simultaneously, with the pharaoh's wife remaining clothed and taking a few steps back. Stunned, the Kisar witnessed a masturbation orgy. On the one hand didn't want to look, but on the other hand was curious to see where this would lead. "Ye gods, release your fluids and let life be where none can thrive. The gate is open, the path is clear for you," exclaimed Cleopatra, with the gods continuing to manipulate themselves and their excitement rising. Chenro was very fascinated by this, and it secretly excited him to watch Yanapu, who was similar to his kind, satisfying himself. He almost forgot that he was not here for entertainment, but had an important mission. Sobek and Thoth took a step forward and moaned softly. They climaxed and squirted cum onto the glowing stone structure. Their fellow Bass took her fingers out of her womanhood and let her body fluid drip onto the stone slab. Cleopatra raised her arms in the air and called out magical lines, but they were so indistinct that my protagonist could not interpret them. "By the gods! Now I understand!" the dog exclaimed, as, starting from the tablet, a blue, broad beam of light spread upward toward the pyramid's peak, and the light grew brighter. Oh, I spoke to myself. I understand it now, too. The god should literally leave something in the pyramid. Of course. It was now clear to me, too, what this meant. In the ceremonies before, the Anthros had tried to send their own bodies to Alpha Vol with this beam of light. However, they died, not knowing why. So that this would not happen again, they now sent something that contained all the information that made life possible. How clever, I praised and continued reading. Chenra's exclamation, however, did not go unnoticed. The Pharaoh turned in his direction, startled, and shouted angrily, "What? Who are you? Seize him!" Quickly, the two remaining Romans ran toward the Alsatian, drawing their short swords and cursing in Latin. However, the gods were not impressed by this disturbance. Sekhmet and Horus also experienced an orgasm, and so only the sperm of the jackal was missing. They also distributed the gelatinous fluids on the central point and sighed with relief. What was happening here meant that the gods were literally sending their seed to Alpha Vol. Before Yenipu could add his, complete the ceremony, Chenra had to interrupt just that. Why one did not simply bring a bowl with the body fluids, but the deities had to masturbate on the spot, was not clear to the Alsatian. Perhaps, he thought, the shipment could only succeed if magic and formulas were used, and masturbation was a part of it. As the soldiers ran toward him, Chenra drew his sword and successfully fended off the enemy blades with it. His protector served him well, as he let the cutting edges of the short swords bounce off him like raindrops, making loud, metallic sounds. The first enemy the male killed by unerringly ramming his blade into one of his eyes and kicking him in the stomach area to boot. The second, who had quickly approached from behind, he threw over his shoulder, bent over him and sank the weapon directly into his mouth, which was wide open from the pain. Blood gurgled from the man's body, who now twitched wildly and finally died. "Brothers, sisters, go!" exclaimed Yanipu strained, but continued the arm movements. "I'll complete it alone." Promptly, the other Anthros literally vanished into thin air and thus made their way to safety. Breathing hard, Chenra straightened up and walked quickly toward Yanipu, who was still masturbating and looking at him sardonically. Apparently, he deliberately increased the speed of his hand movements, as if he wanted to hurry to finish before the shepherd reached him. In an act of desperation, Queen Tamaris threw herself in the way of Kesar and tried to stop him with her arms raised. "Stop!" she shouted, which made her adversary stop his walk. The dog glared at her and bared its teeth. "Get out of my way, woman!" he shouted, but the monarch had only a plea. "Whoever you are, please, let the gods complete it." She spoke. "Shouldn't it also be in your interest that they leave this dying world? You have no idea what you are about to disturb." The woman lowered her arms, as Gejaz now lowered his sword. Both breathed calmly, looked deeply into each other's eyes and did not move, whereby the Egyptian recognized it as a strange parallel that my protagonist wore a characteristic drawing that flattered his eyelids, as she had had it painted on her skin for this meeting. "You," she stammered irritably, "are from here, even though you look so different from everyone else. What is this magic? Who are you?" The Alsatian replied with a serious look that seemed to pierce the woman, "I would have gladly asked you all the questions I ever had about your world, your majesty. But there is no more time for this." Continuing to fixate on the jackal, which, by all appearances, was about to discharge, the dog decided not to succumb to the temptation of acquiring great knowledge. With a skillful movement of his arm, he cleared his way, sighing. He pushed Cleopatra defiantly and harshly aside, so that she fell to the ground yelping. Such behavior toward a female person, a queen at that, would have been unthinkable to him. The present situation, however, required a discarding of all ideas of etiquette, politeness and restraint. The scream startled the master of Duat, who immediately stopped masturbating, drew his sword per aspera ad astra and ran towards the other male with his penis retracted again. On the one hand, I was very fascinated while reading, because after all I now knew how the Anthros were able to send life into space, but on the other hand I was also irritated, because I wondered, what were these lines of the plot, which were brought into the story by my protagonist, actually supposed to mean? Was he excited when he designed and lived through this situation? Even if the ceremony had taken place like that is, with all the horniness, the masturbation, the sperm. Why was the jackal the last one left? was he so special or a true stallion? I was, in the role of the observing reader, irritated by this and thought to myself, you really should have let off some pressure, Chenra. Oh boy. I shook my head, remembering the first version of the first part of Volpe's Lupus Canis, it had only 320 pages and was packed with nudes and erotica. Yes, it was supposed to be a slim erotic novel. However, I quickly buried that thought when I realized that I had much more to tell than could fit into a single book. Besides, I thought, if I cut out all the erotic stuff, I'd have more room for adult plot. Showing his teeth, the ancient Egyptian god of the underworld continued to walk toward the shepherd, breathing heavily and raising his blade. Chenra expectantly bent his legs, pulled the pharaoh's dagger from its scabbard and took his way towards the unclothed man. Tutankhaten's weapon was, according to the legends, very powerful. If anything could stop the god of death rites, it would be it. A normal sword, he knew, would be powerless against a real god. As he walked, the Alsatian threw the Gajan sword into the sand, since it wouldn't have been able to do anything anyway. When the males met in the middle of the path, Yanapu swung his sword toward Chenra, who in turn deflected the blade with his knife. Metals clanged and growls from both sides echoed through the room. Cleopatra, who had righted herself in the meantime, brought herself to safety and ran out of the structure. And again, you dog crosses my path, hissed the god being. Didn't I tell you that I would choose the time when I would take you to myself? Weapons crossed, Chenra looked into golden eyes which belonged to a jet-black face and, like his own, adorned with eyelids, looked grim and fixed. And again you try to undo everything. And I once said that I am the Kisar and I never succumb to temptation, but accept the offers of my fate. I will always stand in your way, should it be necessary. My Kanad breathed heavily and disconnected both weapons, only to inflict an injury on his opponent's shoulder. It was a small cut, not very deep, from which some golden-colored blood of the jackal leaked. Yanapu groaned and pushed the other male away from him with a kick. He examined the wound on the top of his shoulder and said, "The dagger of Tutankhaten. Where did you get it?" Gajes didn't answer directly, but mocked, "You as a god should actually know. Instead, I find that your privates are not quite as divine as I had imagined. Sad, in a way. Your arrogance, dog, will yet pass you by. You may be able to hurt me, but you won't kill me," the muscular jackal shouted and ran towards Chenra again. The latter was prepared for it and so the two engaged in a fight with fists, blades and paws. Per aspera ad astra shone, reflecting the light from the numerous torches as the burly black dog-like man wielded it. His adversary managed to dodge the weapon, but Yanapu thought this was an amusing game. The god laughed maliciously and noticed that the dog was gradually running out of breath. He put the sword back in its scabbard and used his fists studded with gold rings. "Come on, dog, show me, all without blades," he demanded. Chenra was hit by a few punches after he had put the dagger away. He was able to land a few hits, but had to learn that the god of death rites could fight unfairly, he tripped him, so that the dog went down. Yanapu, golden liquid leaking from his lips, threw himself at the other male and blocked his legs. He strangled his opponent, who gasped and spoke choppily, "Is this how you want to finish it? Strangle a down fighter like a weakling? I thought you could do more." Yanapu should also have an ego, which is why Chenra's question had an effect. The jackal lifted my protagonist by the neck and pushed him in front of a wall so that he could get very close to him with his head and look him directly in the eyes. "Amber," he spoke. "The material which is able to enclose time. Very good choice of the man who created you. Appropriate for your story. Regrettable that even your eyes cannot be eternal." The Alsatian took no notice of this praise at first, but knew that he would have to keep up the resistance for a moment, for he could see out of the corner of his eye that the stone slab still shone with blue light. A few more minutes he would have to hold out, distracting the jackal so that the eclipse would end, the god's plan would fail. Yanapu had not yet come to the climax. "Strained," he replied to the superior male, "but you are also very sexy, if I may say so. Whoever created you did a great job. If you and I had met under different circumstances." Then he looked down the Egyptian's body and completed with a sly grin, "then I would have liked to get to know you better." "I would love," Yanapu spoke threateningly, "to tear out those amber eyes of yours, so that you can finally see in darkness what is really crucial for you. But it gives me great pleasure to play with you. You are a worthy opponent. And you always have been." The shepherd resisted the strong hands of the jackal, but could not escape their force. He panted and flailed his fists, hitting opposing flanks. The other male stuck out his tongue and slowly licked him over one of his eyelid lines. "Yes, now I understand why he built you that way. Masculine, strong, and yet homosexual," he remarked, flashing his fangs. My dog promptly gave him the answer. He and I would rather men lay together holding their dicks than face each other holding their guns. The god smiled, "As we face each other now? I would like to show you my weapon, dog, but I have more important things to do with it." When Gajay's, visibly puzzled by this statement, stopped resisting for a moment, sensing that fainting was imminent, Yanaput took one of his hands from his neck. A final blow from the god hit his chaps, after which he lost his balance from the force, fell, and came to rest against the rock wall. The lord of the Duat did not turn his back on him, but took a step backward. Gajay's consciousness cleared and he managed to sit up. He caught sight of the other male's crotch at eye level. He noticed that although he had retracted his penis, the manhood in its sheath was still swollen. So he added strained, "Ha ha. You're still hard. Must be me, huh?" The dog chuckled softly and spat blood-soaked saliva on the sandy floor as the ancient Egyptian walked slowly toward him again. "Be honest," Gajay's continued to speak. "A guy like you doesn't care if it's a man or a woman, a male or a female. The main thing is to have fun, right? As a god, you can take anything that turns you on right now." Snorting through his nose, the jackal stood directly in front of my shepherd and smiled deprecatingly when he noticed at what level the exhausted dog's head was. The latter sighed when Yanapo grabbed him by one of his ears and lifted his head. He pushed his pelvis forward so that his scabbard touched the Alsatian's muzzle. "Enough of the distraction, dog. Of course I can take what I want. When I'm done with the ceremony, I'll show you my favorite weapon. I think I'll take care of you later, in a special way," he spoke, chuckling smugly. "I will give you the punishment for your continuous intervention. You can be sure of that." Chenra opened his eyes wide in surprise as the Egyptian's furry sheath pulsed right in front of his face. He already suspected what the latter was up to. Yanapu had clenched his teeth, moved the head of the underdog back and forth and rubbed his crotch against its fur. "Why, you can't be serious, can you?" the shepherd whispered exhaustedly as he now sat much less poised and arrogant, motionlessly letting every muscle go limp. A few times the jackal moved his hips, rubbing his scabbard against his adversary's furry cheek before forcibly opening the latter's bloodied muzzle with his hand and speaking, "I'd love to shut you up, but it'll have to wait." A dismissive groan from the dog followed, then a loud sigh, with Yanapu continuing to rub his crotch prodingly. Gajay's could do nothing about this torment. Anger was building up inside him. How could he let himself be humiliated like this? Put up with this male abusing him? Again and again Yanapu thrust, becoming more and more excited and accelerating the movements. The god breathed heavily, stroking the black head fur of my protagonist, who closed his eyes and shed tears of anger. Suddenly, the Egyptian groaned loudly and paused. "Oh yes, dog. Thank you. Now I can finish it." The jackal turned away from his victim and ran back towards the stone slab where the fluids of his god brothers and sisters were. He stood in front of them and began to manipulate his manhood again. Chenra had feared that Yanapu would extend his penis and do something worse with it, but this did not happen. But he also knew, if he did not stop the god, who would fulfill his mission, it would only be a matter of time before he would commit a crime against the inferior. In the meantime, the surface of the table had turned into a shiny, sticky mass on which the light of the conjunction of the celestial bodies shone through an opening in the ceiling vault. This light became stronger and that meant that the climax of the solar eclipse was imminent. In ecstasy, Yanapu threw his head back and moaned loudly one final time, orgasming and spraying his cum onto the stone tablet in several spurts. For Chenra, it was now time to hurry. Standing in front of the stone tablet and panting, the god threw his hands in the air and spoke mystical incantations. He was now distracted, which allowed the Kisar to approach unnoticed from behind. He had recovered somewhat, gathered strength, and was infinitely enraged at the humiliation he had received from the lord of the Duat. Bowed and humiliated, the dog crept up to his tormentor, raised his blue glowing dagger and set about a final, powerful thrust which he delivered into the jackal's back. With all his remaining strength, he stabbed and let the tool sink into the other anthro's back. He had to manage to stop him. But was it already too late for that? The Egyptian shouted out with his dark voice and howled briefly. With his muzzle torn open, he spat out saliva, instantly lowered his arms and abruptly turned around. Chenra couldn't believe his eyes when the prince of the underworld stared at him with bright golden eyes and bared teeth, growled and said to him, "It's too late, dog. You have lost and everything was in vain. You cannot kill me, for I am a god." The jackal no longer let his pain show, but reached to his back with one of his arms and pulled the blade out with a jerk. Liquid gold splattered and ran down his back. His aggressive look changed to a sardonic one when Gejaz abruptly stumbled and was distracted. Yanipo brandished the captured dagger and rammed its blade into the side armor of the protector of the perplexed attacker. I clenched my left fist while reading and held the pen in my right hand. "Yes. I have you now, Chenra," I shouted. It was I who made him stumble over a simple stone, changed the text accordingly. I had understood how to prevent him from trying to interrupt the upcoming process. A simple, small stone it should be, which should let the fight of the canids end. How banal and effective, I gloated and grinned. A small line of text had extreme effects, which impressed me smugly. It was an artifice that I used with a quick pen. Chenra gave a yelp and doubled over. "How? Is that possible?" he asked choppily, simply ignoring the pain because of his astonishment. Yanipo immediately clarified, "If the sword is not made of a material capable of breaking your armor, then it is the blade that is made of the same." So it had not been impossible to penetrate the protector, which Chenra could not have guessed. The only object that could do this was the dagger, which had been made of the same rock. A perfect complement of protection and attack, its deputy insignia now combined to inflict severe damage on the wearer's flank. The dog's knees went weak, but before he could collapse, his opponent grabbed him by the torso and hurled him toward the stone slab. The Alsatian landed backwards on it and slid on its glued surface to its center. Just at that moment, the climax of the meeting of the sun and the moon began and the beam of light, under which Chenra was now also, now filled the whole platform. Yanipo was already running towards the underdog, who was about to stand up on all fours in pain, holding his heavily bleeding wound tensely. Chenra clenched his eyelids, moaning and panting, oblivious to the fact that the god was almost reaching him. The god paused, stopped, and watched as Chenra panted on all fours, blood leaking from his muzzle, and finally collapsed. Covered by the fluids of the god beings, the body of the dog slowly changed and gradually dissolved into its components. The process of sending the seeds of the anthros was now in full swing. The Alsatian observed his hands, arms, all the mucus that had been spread on his body. All structure degraded and distorted, blurred and became indistinct. "With this, I have changed the line of time. I have done it." The Alsatian soldier was sure, he would die like other anthros before him whose bodies tried to travel through the beam. That alone should be enough to distort what should have happened. The result of this, it was going to be different than this timeline originally knew. The male smiled confidently, raised his arm with the last of his strength and extended his middle finger to the jackal. The meant one did not understand this gesture and could not hear the quiet laughter of the other male. So he stopped and tensely watched the process that was taking place. "When you reach the end of time, dog, you will wish that there is another instance waiting for you. I will teach you that you are right about that. I'm not done with you yet," shouted the Lord of Duat, while his opponent completely turned into luminous dust. Its grains flew upward through the square passage in the ceiling of the vault. Now Chenra Gejaz had lost his outer appearance, but felt no pain. He had the feeling of opening his eyes, but he no longer felt his body. The look wandered, however, he recognized that his physical form was gone. There was no space, no being, no pain-filled wailing. The dog could not speak. Only thoughts flowed through his mind. "What happened?" he wondered. "Am I dead or is this the trip to Alpha Vol? Did I make it?" Inside, he heard his breath as he became more and more certain that his action had severely disrupted the timeline. He would survive the transport, contrary to every fear. That could only be thanks to the breastplate. After all, it was made of rock, which came from outer space. So was it the breastplate that protected him before on the way to Gaja, and not Arya? His battle with the Egyptian god meant that he himself would also be sent to Alpha Vol before Anthros could have evolved that far on the planet. Thus, Gejaz would have created a temporal warp, a paradox, making it impossible for Joliad and Amarok to ever be born. Very likely, life could not have evolved in the first place. Relieved, he sighed now and wanted to let everything else come to him. I don't know how I'll arrive, but it doesn't matter at all, his mind spoke contentedly to itself as he realized he was getting closer and closer to the destination of the journey, the planet Alpha Vol.